Friends, it's Morgan, and I'm really excited to get into this podcast episode. But before we do, I wanted to offer an invitation. This May marks the fifth anniversary of the message of becoming a king, going out to reach hearts of men and women like you. And to mark the fifth year anniversary celebration, I want to do a series that goes much deeper into the big ideas of becoming a king. And with that, I'd love to share some of your stories. So if you are someone who's been impacted by becoming a king, by the book, by the video series, by the study guide, by participating or hosting a Becoming a King retreat, we'd love to hear that story. You can go to becomegoodsoil.com and under the More tab, you can click Connect. And there's a way to give a 90-second audio piece to us. So you can record your name, where you're from, and tell us a story of what God has done or is doing in your life through becoming a king. We'd love to share as many of those as possible. Thanks, friends. Let's jump into this podcast.
There's the temptation in this day and age to be a victim or to make victims. And Jesus is offering the third way to like, no, you can come along with me and let me train you, disciple you, coach you. We get it all back.
Friends, it's Morgan, and welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. As you know, if you've journeyed with us for any length of time, it is the core passion of my heart and the heart of my bride, Sherry, to participate with God's initiation of the hearts of men and women into maturity, into wholeheartedness, into a life of ever deeper integration and union with God. We love to invest in the thirsty hearts. And as you'll see over time with Become Good Soil podcast, as we transition to the second half of life, it's our privilege and our opportunity to serve with more and more of our time and energy the sons and daughters of God that are becoming kings and queens, that are ruling and reigning in partnership with God over aspects and dimensions of his kingdom. We love initiation of young hearts, and we love the initiation of the young parts within the hearts of older saints that are among us in these days. With that in mind, I had a desire to bring in the studio my brother Conrad Schottel. He came early into the story of Wild at Heart, and early as in very young in his life, his late teenage years. He was thirsty for God and his kingdom. He was ready to be apprenticed. He showed up on a whim at a Wild at Heart boot camp in Sharp Top Cove in Georgia. He asked for time, and we sat in rocking chairs. And I remember that day, now beyond a decade from today, and his questions, his interest in the things of God and his kingdom, his young life in God, his young marriage, and his passion to become the man God meant when he meant him. I knew this is the kind of man that I want to invest my life in and spend time with. So fast forward, Conrad was an ally of Wild at Heart and Become Good Soil, attended a Become Good Soil intensive. And over time, he took a risk of saying yes to coming and taking a lower seat with our fellowship and serving from the bottom up and mucking stables and hauling water, as it were, and being in proximity with a fellowship of men that are seeking after God's heart and his kingdom, and in our efforts to seek God's kingdom, doing what we can to offer it to others. Years turned to over a decade, and Conrad has become the kind of young man turned middle-aged man that I trust in entrusting others to him. I've watched him. I've witnessed him with his wife, with his children, with men, with messy. And he has become a trustworthy young king. So with that in mind, I wanted to invite him into the studio and ask the question of what's on your heart? What's on the frontier of your apprenticeship in this stage with your life in God? And he said he wanted to talk about how he's learning Christ as coach. How do we come to know Jesus as brother, as advocate, as savior, and as coach? So with that in mind, I want to welcome you to a fresh episode where we're diving deep into the apprenticeship as kings in God's kingdom. There are great treasures in this episode. We finish with a reflection and three pretty provocative questions that I've found that have really challenged me, interrogated me, enticed me, disrupted me. So my hope is that you'll enter in with us and notice what parts of your heart are awakened and illuminated as we enter into Conrad's story. Let's pick up with what brought you here to this place in this moment.
Last 2 years feels like a slow transition from relating to Jesus as primarily relating to him as, hey, you're kind of my modern day medicine man. Yeah. I need you to heal me. And it's this new forging, this new challenge, this new like, no, Conrad, it's time. I will continue to heal you. And that never ends, but it is time to rise. And I'm primarily asking you to grow up and mature.
Conrad, Jesus as modern day medicine man. You know, it's really funny because I'm getting obscure pictures of the medicine men in lots of films, frankly, as a kid. And where I go back is this quote where a lot of this started from George MacDonald, where he said, how have you learned the Father?
Right.
Right. He would go after story as the lens to help us see that there is a way we have learned him. And for most of us and for most of the parts of us, we've actually learned him wrong. That right. is to say, we've learned the Father in ways that aren't truly as he is. And therefore, so much of our discipleship is unlearning how we have learned him wrong, and it's only exposed in the work of becoming who we are intended to be. And as I think of Jesus as modern medicine man, it's very exposing to this idea of like, well, how have we learned Jesus? And it's a theme that you and I have both been on with sort of parallel tracks in the last year. Yeah. And so I was very excited to get a conversation to hear your heart on how you have been learning Jesus.
Yeah, it's really good. Thank you. So excited, so happy to be in this space with you and having this conversation. I think it helps for me to start with story.
Yeah.
And start with, I'm a fourth grade knucklehead, and I was wrecked by Jesus and this story of one man giving it all and inviting us. Something I pray with my daughters, my son, my wife is, Jesus, you died not only to save us, but you died so that we could be in your family. And I was wrecked by that. Even in small town, middle of nowhere, Missouri, at a Southern Baptist church with 45 people. And I knew I wanted it. I didn't know anything else other than my heart said yes. And so I wanted to get baptized. That was like the next step, right? And so I participated in a baptism ritual and I got dunked in front of everybody. And a few years later, I found out that the man who dunked me just devastated the whole church, slept with the secretary, devastated his family, devastated her family, and it wrecked me. And I realized that I actually wasn't baptized then. It wasn't until I was a sophomore in high school when I was actually baptized into the kingdom of God, and it was by my football coach.
Wow.
And it was a Saturday of two-a-day. So we had just spent 5 days sweating, bleeding, crying, suffering. And it was a Saturday scrimmage. And I was a sophomore, and I was in charge of being a part of the scout team, which is kind of like the basically like the guys who get beat up by the really good team, right?
Yes.
The varsity guys. And so it's our varsity defense versus me and a bunch of younger bucks that aren't as strong, fast, and we're just not yet.
Yes.
And we actually start moving the ball on them. And it's a really, it's a high, everyone's a little edgy.
Yeah.
The coaches are edgy. Yep. All the players
right,
are edgy.
This isn't supposed to happen.
And just in general, it's at the end of a really long week.
Yeah.
And it's an ungodly humid August day. It's totally cloudy. It might be drier if it just rained. Like, that's how bad it was, right? So just everybody's pouring sweat. We're actually kind of moving the ball. Tensions are getting high. And we called a play. And the short of it is I found myself, we'll call him Bobby Bush. He's 6'3". He's 290 pounds. He went on to play college ball. It's beside the point. But he had a totally free run at me, and he teed off on me, picked me up, drove me into the ground, and the whole defense kind of swarms the ball carrier and whoever gets tackled, and I'm looking up, and I had just been essentially exposed in front of all my peers, in front of all my coaches, been humiliated, failed deeply because the pass was intercepted that I threw. And I also have almost 300-pound man on top of me. Like, I'm in physical pain too. And it was one of those beautiful moments of it was meant for evil. I was supposed to be shamed. And the defense is all around me, and they're kind of taunting me. And it's these senior guys. I'm a sophomore. I'm young. And they're, you're hot shit now, Shadow. Look at you now. And before darkness could even set its claws into this story, before shame could enter in, all I remember was a white blur. See this white blur peeling these varsity guys off me. And before I know it, I go from being totally drenched in sweat and the dew of the grass and laying on my back, I go from that to being stood up on my feet. I felt the hands of another that was stronger than me. He picked me up. And before I even knew what happened, I hear this southern drawl behind me, this big booming voice. And he said, "This is my guy. Get your sorry asses back to your side of the ball. You didn't hurt him one bit." And then he said again, "This is my guy." It was Coach Jones. And in that moment, I realized he literally took me from death to life. And when he stood me up, I wouldn't have known at that moment. And it's only been over 15 years now, processing that, wondering why that had such an impact. Why did that imprint so deeply on my soul? And I realized it's because when I stood up, I was still 15. I was still awkward and lanky. There was a lot of unfinished and not yet in me. But in the deepest part of my soul, something in me knew that I was actually unstoppable. And that's not, you know, that's not this like self energy or this self reliance or like self made man. It was because another stronger man picked me up when I had fallen, and had not only picked me up, but had claimed me as his. It was a moment of being secure. Maybe for one of the first times in my life to be secure in another man's affection and love. And then from that place, just this beautiful story takes place of my initiation started. And because he had claimed me, because I knew that I had a seat at his table, being Coach Jones's table, he named me out in front of my peers and in front of the community of men, the other coaches. And it was a moment where, like, I mean, the football field's silent when he said that. It was, I had an irrevocable place at the table. And from there, I totally trusted him. And because he, because that baptism happened, my heart allowed him to bring loving challenge, to bring playful demand, and to not let me be anything less than who God intended me to be in that season. Mm-hmm. And it's been an illustration now for decades of what Jesus is up to. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself, how have I learned Jesus? How am I learning Jesus? I find myself learning him as a really, really good coach. Mm.
So by way of contrast, this is the subterranean, right? There's always in the subconscious the story going on of these the formation of the belief structure that yes. goes unnamed, but it's shaping every moment and every day.
Absolutely.
You had a heart for God in fourth grade, mm-hmm. but this is, you know, 5 years later. What would you say then, that revelation, that baptism, that immersive experience that you just described so beautifully, what did it undo? What was the unlearning? In other words, now you look back, mm-hmm. though your heart was for God, what was the Jesus that was being taught to you before that moment that had to be unlearned?
Yeah, so you had the to Jesus describe that it. Was being taught was just, I would say, just the get out of jail free card,
okay.
the ticket out of hell,
yep.
the guy who loves you, but he's really not... in proximity to you, in contrast to being physically devastated by Bobby Bush,
yes.
to being humiliated by my peers, and in a moment where darkness was supposed to take root, I experienced, I would just say, this newness or this fresh proximity of Christ in another person, of Jesus Christ mm-hmm. in another person, and yeah, so it was a distant God that yeah. I had to unlearn, and I began being pursued by the reality of he's not far off, and we do, as you've said, as John's taught, Eugene has said, we actually get to experience Jesus just the same way the disciples do.
Yes.
And that's out there. That's yes. bold, but it's true.
So you're now... you know, a decade into a very you're just shy of a decade into a very intentional mm-hmm. Consent to discipleship. And you have the seeds at 15, so earlier than that decade in you mm-hmm. of this redeemed image of Christ and this with me mm-hmm. coach.
Yeah.
I want to go into some other nuances of it, but before yeah. we do that, I'd love to go just to like a very present day example of where that Jesus mm-hmm. is manifesting in your life today, because football was high stakes when right. you're 15.
Right.
Then you went on to play college ball.
Right.
And then you went on to get married and have three children. And as we talk a lot about initiation, what feels like an enormous risk at the moment is actually small
right.
in proportion to what God desires to entrust to your care for you to steward down the road, mm-hmm. and that's your training. So take me into your heart as the formation, the revelation of this is who Jesus is for me, and real time, what does that look like?
Yeah, so there's kind of mentioned this, so yeah, in that story, in back then, found myself reading Wild at Heart and finding myself at an event, and that was the beginning of what I would say like this first kind of decade of my journey,
yes.
really a decade, the first leg of my journey, largely like, Jesus, I need you to heal me. In other words, I was really relating to Jesus as a healer of my soul, mm-hmm. of the harm, of the trauma, of the lack, of the abandonment of my story. And that was really beautiful. And I still find myself face to face with a man who you know and love every other Wednesday, mm-hmm. Receiving Jesus as a healer, mm-hmm. right? That's not going to change.
Yeah, and so that's your counselor,
yeah, local that's my counselor. Yeah. And these last 2 years have been very transitioning for me. They're years of transition where, in increasing measure, I am giving Jesus permission not only to heal me, but permission to lovingly challenge me and bring what I call an appropriate aggression to kind of shock my soul awake and bring me into maturity. And that brought me into scriptures and just reading the scriptures with our BGS guys afresh and noticing Jesus never once lays his hands on any of the disciples and heals them.
It's amazing.
It's wild, right? And I look at that and I go, God, what are you communicating?
Yes.
What are you up to in that? And so it's led me on a journey to allow Jesus to use the language with me, the same language that he used with the disciples.
Yes.
An old crusty Catholic guy that I love said, if you look at his language with the disciples, it's largely a language of initiation, a language of he's bringing them into powerlessness, to dying to their self-life. All that to say, the current place in my heart, we're doing, I was engaging in the Soul's Review. And I was looking at my past year, which there's a lot in that year that isn't going to be normal for a year.
Yes.
I've moved. There was a lot of transition, a lot of, there's just a lot of it was full. But my predominant feeling was exhaustion after my last year. And it's interesting because I've engaged the 30 Days to Resilient and the Pause app where you're really checking in with how are you feeling? And like, it's across the board, morning. Doesn't matter if it's 10:30 in the morning, 10:30 at night, anywhere in between. How is Conrad feeling? Exhausted. Finally, asked Jesus and approached him with the posture of coach me, challenge me with your love. What am I so exhausted of? And he said, that's really easy. You're exhausted of you. I'm like, what do you mean by that? And he's like, you're addicted to yourself. And you know me, and you know my story, and you know where I'm at, and I wouldn't necessarily find myself as a man who's addicted to himself.
Yes.
And yet, there is some treasure to be had there. And so that's a very current, like I'm walking that out with two of my brothers right now of, hey, Conrad, how's it going today?
Yes.
Being addicted to Conrad, being addicted to how he wants it, when he wants it, exactly what he wants. And it's understandable. I can root that in compassion, and it's very reasonable that I want what I want when I want it, how I want it. And Jesus is lovingly demanding that I grow beyond that. And he's coaching me in that.
Yeah, it's super helpful. I want to linger on this word coach. I think, as you just shared, we could easily substitute the word initiator.
Yes.
Right? I love that language because we've communicated many times that the orientation, the narrative arc, the interpretive grid for all of our experiences, if we were to come home to this initiation, then the idea of further maturity would be normative.
Right.
But yet you hear the word acting immature and we react pretty against that. It's it's a shaming.
Yes.
Right? It leads most people to shame when you go, we're all immature in ways Jesus had to mature and yet was without sin. Like that's a staggering revelation that there are places and ways in which he had to grow and change.
Right.
Grew in wisdom and stature. And then we have this phrase, rabbi, which, you know, just has so much delicious connotation. But, you know, Ray Vanderloin is one of the preeminent modern day scholars. And he, you know, he has this great quote I love where he says, if you're going to follow a rabbi who walks on water, you only do so by getting out of the boat. To be under a rabbi in biblical times was to be in dangerous proximity. It was relational. There was actually something that I would say wasn't scalable.
Right.
And here's the key. It was easily reproducible. The disciples modeled that. but it wasn't scalable.
Yeah.
It was life on life. I love in one of his series, he said that you would actually have to be covered with the dust of your rabbi, that literally you would be close enough that he would kick up dust,
right,
and you would take it on. It's approximation of nearness. It was something like life learned together. And so I want to take the idea of initiator, the idea of rabbi, but I want to explore the application of that as coach.
Yeah.
Because that sounds very intimate to your story. Yes. And as a, you know, as a college athlete, like as a big part of your initiation. But I have to start with a confession. Like as I was preparing for this podcast and praying, I asked Jesus to take me back to coach right. in my story.
Yeah.
And what were the images? And it's just so fascinating. They were mostly negative.
Yeah.
I would say to like a 95th percentile. Mm-hmm. It was guys shaming me. It was guys bringing their question to my success or failure.
Yep.
So I needed to succeed for them to feel good. You know, I noticed this theme of fascinating. My coaches in middle school, my coaches in high school, they didn't actually cultivate my skill.
Right.
They actually took wherever it was and asked me to perform, and right. I would either win or lose.
Right.
Rather than this idea of, okay, well, I'm here to help you grow
yeah.
and improve. And so it goes on, but I think a sort of a parked idea to come back to, and actually maybe even now, before I transition to you, Conrad, for our listeners, pause for a moment. When you think of coach in your story, what comes to mind? So we'll do an audio transition there, and then let's kick it back to you and wherever you want to go, restoration versus yeah. maturity, or you know, we can jump in those two sections.
Yeah, well, one.
So you're coming right off the time with
yeah,
God.
To respond to that and to think about that, I have that story of baptism with Coach Jones, and mm-hmm. I have a very unique and intimate story with Coach. But I would also like to say that hasn't been all of my coaches,
yes.
and I very much, even me praying into this and coming into this, thinking about all of the times that I didn't get baptized, but I got shamed,
yes.
right? I didn't get matured, or I wasn't invited into maturity or initiation, but instead I was invited into performance,
mm-hmm.
Or even the really bad ones of like, I actually was just nothing but wounded by him
yes.
or her or harmed by them. I have a laundry list of those too.
Yeah, I think the story that haunts me from your story you shared with my son from college.
Yes.
You were recruited
yeah.
to play university ball, and he was debating, does he go D2 lacrosse in college? When is his retirement? When mm-hmm. is the season? And you gave this, you shared with him, once you were on the team, you said, they're already recruiting for my replacement. And it was just this idea of all that pomp and circumstances, mm-hmm. and you're amazing. The
yep.
moment you step on that field, they're actually recruiting for your replacement. In other words, the primary effort is for the team's mm-hmm. future success.
Right.
And whatever part you can play for their success, generally speaking, the goal of the coach is to win.
Right.
Right. And in a contrast of that, we were sitting in a parent information meeting for my daughter's volleyball, and there's this beautiful moment. I'd never heard this said by a coach before. She was passionate. She was a D1 volleyball player. This was volleyball. And
yeah.
she said, make no mistake, the goal is to win. We are here to win.
Yes.
The purpose is to mature these women, to grow them into young women of character. Never confuse the purpose and the goal. I could feel in my spirit that moment of my daughter is in the hands of a safe and loving coach.
Right.
So just reflecting back to you, I noticed the civil war against mm-hmm. this idea of what is coach.
Yeah.
And so that even just the adversary of wanting to steal the reality that Jesus is the greatest coach.
Right.
And that area is, it's embattled.
Very. And it's, I would say it's mostly enemy territory, right? I mean, you say what your daughter's—
like decreated.
Right. And you say what your daughter's volleyball coach said, and I'm over here going like, Dabo Swinney at Clemson, big FCA guy even, and coaches football at Clemson. Nick Saban coached for years at Alabama. Brilliant coaches, winners through and through. Players love them. Players could, would probably even have similar experiences of my baptism story.
Yes.
And yet, I see them mostly selling out for the performance of it. And I just want to say, like, you could probably take some notes from Ab's volleyball coach.
Right.
Right? Because there is a very big distinction in this place in coach and coaching of performance versus maturity and the purpose and the goal and that nuance. And I just find it to be very rare and very, as you said, decreative, heavily entrenched enemy territory.
Yes.
And I find it, a lot of people, a lot of men that I talk to even, it hampers, it negatively impacts their capacity to be challenged or even criticized. In other words, and I'll share a story for me. There's sometimes when Samantha makes a comment and I'm filtering it through, you're already being recruited over. We're already looking for your replacement, pal.
So spoken over you, right, is this belief system of Jesus as my coach. And the message is, it's performance, and you were the husband, and now your recruit, you know, that they're already recruiting for your replacement because you're blowing it.
And even, and we'll just play in the sandbox because it's really, it's right in that, in my college story. But there was a time when what was spoken to me in my baptism story with Greg Jones was totally the enemy spoke the exact opposite and through another coach said, you're not the guy for the job and you never will be. We're already replacing you, recruiting you, all that. And there's all kinds of story in different places we could go there. But all that to say, what I've noticed in my own spirit and in my own life is it's impacted my capacity. It's inhibited the potential and the place where Jesus actually wants to lovingly come and challenge and invite us and playfully say, come along this way so that you can mature. It just cuts it off at the knees. You can't even receive that. And I know a lot of men that can't receive this aspect of Jesus because of a coach, a teacher, a dad, because the criticism and the shame has just totally stolen the voice of Jesus and his redemptive voice as a coach.
And what's fascinating is, and I want to get to some real practical examples, but you are naming the epicenter of what I would describe as the intent of intimacy between Jesus and a man.
Yes.
Right? Like the building blocks of initiation are those places of many, many small failures, many, many practice reps. You know, Joshua was in highly competitive lacrosse, and that was very different than sort of a school sport.
Right.
So I got this world of these elite D1 athletes turned coaches.
Right.
And man, they would do rep after rep after rep, and there'd be a lot of failure.
Right.
And this one Coach Nick with Blue Label, he pulled Joshua aside and dad at the end, and he's like, after a really hard day, I remember, I'm just learning as a dad, like, is this good?
Yeah.
Is this healthy, unhealthy? And he said, 1%. And Joshua looked at me and said, what do you mean? He said, you improved 1% today.
Right.
And I was like waiting for sort of the, like the reprimand or like, oh, like that's not a good number in most metrics. And he goes, we do that 100 days in a row. That's 100% change.
Right.
We're going to change the world.
Yep.
Good job. And he walked away and it was like, oh, these are the building blocks.
Right.
And it was this deep I believe in you. There was affection. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of playfulness, and it was really hard work. And the building blocks were mostly failure, yeah. but framed by a coach saying, this is how we do this.
Right.
You're right on track to meet the goal and the purpose.
Right. Well, and that even speaks to, I mean, something you have said that has helped me actually embrace Jesus even more as a coach recently of you get to practice without pressure, Conrad.
That's it.
And I can remember, it's funny because there was, we actually had an exercise or a period in our practice where we actually called it pressure cooker. It was high stakes. It was offense versus defense. It was the number ones versus the number one. It was evenly matched competition.
Yes.
And the loser had to do a man maker, which is just essentially a burpee every 5 yards. And we called it pressure cooker because, like, if you lost, you had to do a man maker. But really, in the true context and frame of it, there was no pressure.
Yes.
If you lost, you lost. You did a man maker, and like, it's a little hard on like, it gets your cardio up, but it wasn't the end of the world.
Yes.
And I realized, like, those moments of practice were the most important, and those are supposed to be in light of all these instances where Jesus is saying these pretty radical things, almost abrasive things. Men can't receive it because they're associating with this pressure to perform. But it's all these things like, leave your boat, follow me, lose your life so that you can find it. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, there won't be any new life that comes from it. You know, Jesus says you can't serve God and money. You can't serve God and power. All of those things were meant to be deeply rooted and firmly established in a context of Jesus is the coach or the rabbi or the initiator. You're the student or the player or the disciple, and you get to practice these without pressure for 4 and 5 decades of your life so that when Morgan is in his 60s and Conrad's in his 50s, and John is in his 80s, they have become the kind of men who bring the atmosphere of heaven with them wherever they go. The scriptures have become autobiographical. They have become the disciples who leave it all and follow Jesus. They've become Stephen. They've become Paul. That's the gold.
So, Conrad, I want to get super practical. What we're risking with our sanctified imagination is all else being true about the redeemed image of Jesus. What if one of the segments of our story that has had much opposition for most men, this idea of a coach, is actually one of the primary faces of the redeemed Christ that's meant to come to us and meant to be a fuel for us to be able to properly interpret the hardship, the challenges,
yes.
The invitations to die in our story in a fresh way. And as we talk about a lot of the time, Peterson says, if something's biblical, then it's practical.
Mm-hmm.
And if something is practical, then it's biblical. And so I want to get super practical, you know, now in this decade, deep in your initiation, you know, a husband, a dad, a disciple, can you take me in a couple examples where you found yourself in a circumstance where you said, I am risking everything on receiving Christ as my coach. It's my orientation, it's my fuel, and it's how I can see clearly through what feels impossible.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to my heart is the kindness of Jesus as a coach. I was in a meeting, I was in a round table with a really good group of men in my old coaching office with you and a couple other old guys. I was the young buck, and guy's name's Doug Kramer, and Jesus was really patient with me, and he was inviting me to leave everything that I've ever known. and I knew it, and I wasn't ready. And I asked
literally move out to Colorado.
Yep. Yeah,
and leave your work.
Yep.
Leave your family, biological, extended family.
Yep. Leave it all. It is the scripture whenever he comes to the guys that are fishing, and it's their livelihood. And in those days, it was also their families, like, because the fishing was what their dads did,
yes.
Right? And that's how they made, that's how they survived.
Yep.
And he said, leave and come follow me. And I, that's what was being asked of me, and I wasn't ready. And I'm in this group, and I asked another older brother named Doug, how much does it cost? Like, I really asked that, and he didn't tell me. His answer was something beautiful, like, it'll cost more than you think, and it'll hurt more than you think, but it will be worth it. That's what his answer was. And this is really fresh. This is present days, just 2 days ago, I finally got our vehicles licensed in Colorado. Just this moment of taking the Missouri plates off the van and taking the Maryland plates off the taco and putting Colorado on there. And I remembered that call and that meeting and that moment with Doug. And it was a moment where Jesus was saying, you're mature enough to actually receive it, but I'll tell you how much it costs. Everything you got. Everything you got. And so, yeah, that's a moment. And I'm thinking of, again, I want to highlight the kindness and tenderness of Jesus, of like the conversation happened almost 3 years ago and the license plates just happened 2 days ago, of like, a good coach isn't in a rush.
Yeah,
and Jesus isn't in a rush.
Working its way into your body,
yep.
Into your heart, into your story.
Yep. And you know, Jesus as a coach doesn't have the limits that Greg Jones did. He only had 4 years with me, and Jesus, he will not leave us as orphans. He doesn't play by the rules of that kind of time. He's got all the time in the world to practice with us. It's really helpful. Other piece, I was sharing part of moving and leaving it all was this deep grief in me that I couldn't understand. I brought it to you. I brought it to a couple other older guys, and it was this thing with my parents, my mom and dad, who I love deeply, but I felt loss. I felt grief, and another man helped me name it. Of like, man, it sounds like you're grieving the loss of relationship with your family, or even it sounds almost like you're grieving a death that hasn't happened, almost like you need to have a funeral for him. And immediately I remember having that conversation with that man and that verse where Jesus says, unless you hate your mother and father and brother and sister, and then he says, and even your own life, you can't be my disciple. It's like, Jesus, what do you do with that? And he's like, I want you to bury your mom and dad. And so I called my buddy, my best friend, my ride or die guy. His name's Bo, and he drove 3 hours, and we rented bikes, and we biked for 10 miles. Around Smithville Lake, and I had two items that kind of represented a place in my story where I needed more than I received from mom and dad. And I literally took a shovel and I put it in the ground and I buried it and I wept. And my brother just sat there with me, Bo, and he witnessed me. And in that moment, I realized, like, I wasn't healed as much as I was matured and consenting and saying yes to Jesus, and whatever the story, however it ends up, I'm letting it go so that I can bless my mom and dad and love them. That feels like the essence of it. It feels like the essential nature of not only relating to Jesus as the modern day medicine man and the guy who can heal my trauma, but also allowing him to usher us into the pattern of reality, which is death and life,
yes,
cross and resurrection, right?
Mm. Yeah, Conrad, I really appreciate that in that story you were naming, it's actually an act of blessing mom and dad.
Right.
You are blessing them. This actually is not about them,
right,
in this story, but you are enacting the scriptural invitation that a man must leave his father and mother.
Yep.
And it goes on to say other things about cleaving to his wife, but the point is, in that moment, there is a necessity and initiation that very few parents understand, very few children have the privilege of getting when they are young men and young women, but they have to leave.
Yep.
And there are pieces of our identity which we can only uncover by leaving our parents' house. And for you, it wasn't into your 30s that you had that privilege. And it's very raw for me because I'm going through that very same thing now, but I'm on the parental side.
Right.
My son is in the process of leaving my home, and it's absolute death,
yep,
to me.
Totally.
It's death of dreams, of imagination, of a way of joy, of friendship, camaraderie, and it's essential.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential for him. It's essential for me. And the hope is that perhaps if he returns, which is on God's timeline with him and not, mm-hmm, mine, that he'll know home for the first time,
mm-hmm,
as it truly is. That is to say, he'll know himself,
yeah,
for the first time. And so that act is one of blessing. But the idea that I hear you saying that's so important is we are participating with death that's actually impossible if we're not relying totally on the resources of Jesus Christ.
Correct.
To be our resurrection. And that resource comes in the form of the bumpy path,
mm-hmm,
of maturing, and it's little by little, and there's setbacks, but that is the invitation from death to life. And so what you described with your brother Bo was Jesus actually coaching you through a necessary rite of passage that had your parents had the resources and had they gone through their own,
mm-hmm,
initiation of release,
yes,
they would have been better served to bless you. But regardless, you were able to bless them and still participate under Jesus's leadership to get back a treasure that is essential that you didn't have someone shepherding for you when you were a younger man.
Absolutely.
So I find it so hopeful.
Well, it's so hopeful because what I'm aware of is to move, Jesus is always gonna heal. He's all over the gospel's healing, and he's always gonna heal us, he's gonna heal me, he's gonna heal you. But to also open up the dimension of Jesus as coach is so hopeful because the thing about what you were just naming of like, I needed blessing and I needed to be sent.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm,
I didn't get it.
Yes.
And the temptation in this culture,
yes,
in this precarious moment of what happened to you, and let's give you a wound-identified identity or a victim mentality, right?
Yes.
Is when Jesus becomes our coach, who we trust in increasing measure, we get to actively take back that which we did not receive, mm-hmm, with him. It's like for me, it's one of the most beautiful things of masculine aggression of like me and Jesus and Bo Bell on that day, on that hallowed ground, we took the blessing back.
Wow.
And it wasn't dependent on someone else,
yes,
saying what I wanted them to say.
Yes.
It was dependent on my consent and participation with Jesus. And he was the one who led it all, by the way.
Mm.
He's the one who said it thousands of years ago, unless you hate your family,
yes,
and your own life,
right,
you can't be my disciple.
Right.
And then he brought that to the intersection of my story and my life, and we took it back. It's like I always love the story of Jacob wrestling God,
mm,
and taking his blessing. There's the temptation in this day and age to be a victim.
Yes.
And, or to make victims. And Jesus is offering the third way to like, no, you can come along with me and let me train you, disciple you, coach you, we get it all back.
Yes. Yeah, where I think I'm just putting myself in the shoes of a listener, because I'm listening to your story and I can feel that shrinkage of like, but what about here? But what about here? But
totally.
What about this? And what I'm struck by, you know, in my own experience, I was walking with my spiritual director earlier this year, and I was sharing some very challenging circumstances I found myself in. And the spiritual director reflected back, what if you are exactly where you're supposed to be?
Right.
What if where you are and who you are today in that place where you are is exactly where you're supposed to be? Mm-hmm. And what if it begins with not solving, but inviting Jesus here? Taking this leader, this spiritual director up on the invitation to practice it rather than to argue, try it on.
Right.
And the image in my sanctified imagination was sitting with Jesus at a campfire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a picture, if you tracked with Become Good Soil, Hello Trouble, the Unstoppable video.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit brought me back to this image in that 1 minute commercial for the Gerber knife. And it near the end, there's a shot of this beautiful man at a campfire,
yeah.
And it shows these eyes. He looks a lot yep. like you with these flames.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just eye to eye with a good man. He looks a lot like you. It's mm-hmm. sort of, in a good way, freaking me out yeah. right now. Sharing a campfire with Jesus.
Mm.
And this idea of like, I invite you here. Mm. And that as my coach, my recreated coach, the one who advocates, it mm-hmm. just hearkens that big mm-hmm. brother, someone in front of me, mm-hmm. calling me up, believing in me, giving me everything I need, including healthy boundaries,
mm-hmm.
blessing my limitations, saying, I will meet you here. And the invitation to die is actually a gateway to get to life.
Yes.
You know, we're recording this in Lent, and so often Lent is about death, mm-hmm. and it's like punitive. And we miss the invitation to say, no, Lent is all about life.
Yeah.
And life only comes through moving through death.
Right.
And so what is the death that we're being coached to move through in order that we can get to life?
Yeah, Morgan, and even to circle back on that example of the funeral with my brother Beau and burying you know, quote unquote, burying my family, that wasn't punitive. That wasn't self-hateful or hateful towards them. It was about allowing Jesus to lead me through this process and allowing him to challenge me and to use some pretty shocking, pretty radical imagery, symbolism, so that he could lead me to a genuine forgiveness, a genuine blessing and letting go of my parents. And the fruit of it is not the end of relationship with them. It's actually taking on a new shape and a new form. And to date, the most redemptive level of relationship I've had with them is what I'm enjoying now. And so it's really beautiful and really hopeful.
Conrad, I'm challenged. I'm curious. And mostly, I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
It's such a joy to be siblings with you, a yep. bit older
yep.
as a brother, and to be going after all this together and get to stand as witness in proximity of this story for now a decade. And friends, this works. I've watched Conrad respond to Jesus as coach for a decade, and it's beautiful, and we're just getting started. So well done. Yeah,
thank you.
And as we turn a corner here, you have our attention. What do you want us to remember?
Yeah, I think just to highlight at the intersection of what your spiritual director was suggesting of what if you're exactly where you're supposed to be, what would it be like to hear Jesus invite us in Matthew 5:48, the kind of famous verse that no one knows what to do with because they don't understand, so they ignore it, but it says, be perfect, just like your Father in heaven. What would it be like to hear that verse, to hear that loving challenge from Jesus, not in a container of performance, but in the possibility of what if you already are? What if you are right where you're supposed to be? And being perfect is less about the performance and more about consenting to where you are and what Jesus is present day right now inviting us to go through, to die to. I think that's really hopeful.
You know, we have three questions we want to leave you with to take action on this. But before we get into those questions, I think Conrad has that beautiful invitation. Let's take our 90-second pause to get curious about that invitation. Conrad, can you read it one more time in your own language? And let's take 90 seconds, and then we'll come back with three more questions for our friends.
Yeah. What would it be like to receive the loving challenge, the playful demand of Jesus from Matthew 5:48, when he says, be perfect, just like your Father in heaven is perfect? What would it be like to receive that not as performance or heavy laden, but as the invitation and possibility that we are right where we are supposed to be right now, and we're right on time, and the only thing to do is to ask Jesus, is where are you asking me to die? Let's take 90 seconds and go with that.
Joseph Campbell did a lot of beautiful redemptive work in recovering masculine initiation on the most meta level. And he has a fascinating book, A Hero with 1,000 Faces. And I think I come to his work with this beautiful ache of so much and so close, and yet I'm still looking for the full revelation of Jesus Christ. Right. You know, that ache of so much of the kingdom without the king.
Yeah.
And I've gleaned from his work. I've been strengthened from his work. And yet in this conversation, Conrad, it's reminding me the hero with 1,000 faces is Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Jesus Christ died, resurrected, and ascended, coming to us here and now. And so this face of Jesus as our coach is an alluring one. And I really appreciate your invitation for people to take it soberly and winsomely and let it interrogate each of us and invite us into more. And so as we close this episode of the Become Good Soil podcast, I want to offer three questions for your reflection. And be really careful not to self-edit. Just notice what rises up in you. First off, that first pause we had in the episode, take an inventory of your experience of coach. Good, bad, other. What's your experience? And how do you notice in that experience this idea of Jesus as a coach being contended and contested in your story? The second question is, what would you have loved? In other words, if you could rewrite your story, what is the most redemptive version you could have imagined for the role of coach in your masculine initiation? And the third, what if Jesus is everything you have come to know him to be and is your one true coach? In other words, what else is lacking today in the full revelation that Jesus offers himself as the true recreated coach? My encouragement is take those three questions, take time with God, re-listen to this podcast, and just for some more joy for your imagination and for your formation is ask the Holy Spirit for a great film that features a great coach. The most recent one I've watched is Boys in the Boat. The book is phenomenal. I recommend reading. And it's actually a film, if you haven't seen it, that the film captures much of the brilliance of the book. But there is a lot in the story of the Boys in the Boat and this Olympic team from Washington. There's so much in the heart of the coach for these young men that, Conrad, as you shared, I thought of Jesus as coach embodied in the coach role in the film, mm-hmm. in the book, Boys in the Boat. So take the three questions, pick a great film, pick several films, use it as a conversation with a band of brothers or with your bride or with your older sons, and dream big, because no matter how big you dream, you can't outdream God. And above all else, brothers, thank you for not quitting. Thank you for keeping heart. Mm-hmm. Thank you for choosing to risk. Thank you for setting your gaze on the life that's available, that you become a like-hearted peer with us that can make it through the trials, the tribulations, the short-term suffering to become the kind of man everything God meant when he meant you. Conrad, thanks for joining us on the Become Good Soil podcast. It is great to be with you here.
Yeah, thanks. It's been awesome.